Herman Miller.com, online seller of the Herman Miller Aeron Chair. All Aeron colors and configurations available on the web at sitforless.com.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from World Gourmet Foods, now in their new location at 105 Krispy Kreme Drive in Bloomington. The grand opening will be held on Saturday, September 13th, with a large food show featuring more than 500 samples. Information at worldgourmetfoods.com, bringing the taste of the world to Bloomington Normal.
It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. Today, the afternoon magazine features an interview from the AM 580 archives. Since it's a recorded interview, we won't be taking phone calls this afternoon.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. A hut on wheels houses a shepherd in Idaho. A farm in Pennsylvania has sheltered a family for 175 years. In an abbey in Iowa, Trappist nuns share chores. In Hartford, Connecticut, a 14-year-old Somali refugee adjusts to life in an American apartment while people fall asleep in their dream homes in Seaside, Florida. Those are thumbnail descriptions of a handful of the photographs you'll find in America at Home, a close-up look at how we live. The images and the essays that accompany them asks the question, what does home mean? That's our topic this afternoon. Our guest this afternoon is Rick Smullen. He and Jennifer Irwin are the creators of America at Home, a close-up look at how we live. It is a collection of more than 250 photographs and 6 essays that document the ways in which we make the buildings that shelter us home. The book is the result of the collaboration between professional and amateur photographers, writers, journalists, and information researchers. They teamed up to capture our lives at home in America over the course of a week last September, from September 17th to the 23rd, 2007. Our guest, Rick Smullen, says, quote, "The idea of home is as universal and deeply ingrained as that of mother or father," he says. Ask people to describe what the word home means to them, and their answers tap into a pool of emotions and memories. Listeners, your questions and comments are invited this afternoon. Join us with your thoughts about home. We look forward to your phone calls. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Rick Smullen is a photographer. He's worked for Time, Life, and National Geographic. He's best known as the creator of the Day in the Life book series. He and his wife, Jennifer Irwin, are the principals of Against All Odds Productions. America at Home, a close-up look at how we live, is published by Running Press Book Publishers. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Rick, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Celeste, very nice to be here. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
That was terrific. You're very welcome. Well, this project was inspired by a conversation you had with your then 7-year-old daughter, Phoebe. Tell us about that.
It's funny where inspiration comes from. My daughter, as you said, Phoebe, was 7 last spring, and it was her first sleepover was coming up, and it was the same little girl she played with after school every day, but because it was a sleepover, she was very nervous, and, you know, what teddy bear should I take, and which doll, and, you know, if I want to come home in the middle of the night, will you get me? And, you know, Phoebe, of course. And so I led her over there, and the next morning I went and picked her up, no calls during the night, and she was so proud of herself for surviving. And we were walking back to our house, and we were holding hands, and I said, Phoebe, what's the one thing if you're going to tell your children someday, what was the one thing you can remember the most about your first sleepover? And she leaned over to me, and she sort of whispered, she said, Dad, did you know other people's lives are different than ours? I said, what do you mean? She goes, Charlotte's mother let us eat Cheerios for dessert, and they didn't go to bed till 9:30, and she's sort of listing this whole, and they prayed before they ate. And I said, you know, she was so astounded. It was like the first time you could hear that she suddenly realized that while everybody has a home, everybody has parents, what happens in your home, how you turn your dwelling into your home is individual and unique to each family. And she said, you know, Dad, you should do a book about how people's homes are the same but different.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I said to my wife when I got home, you know, Phoebe had a great idea on the way back, and we both looked at each other and said, wouldn't that be interesting if you could invite people all over the United States for 1 week, not just professional photographers, but anybody who wants, I mean, everybody's got a digital camera now, to sort of contribute to creating a little time capsule. Celeste, when you were growing up, do you have your scrapbook, your photo album from your parents when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. I have a photo album, and then I have some shoeboxes.
Well, I mean, you know, what's so interesting is imagine if 100 years ago someone had done this book, America at Home, before television, radio, the internet, cell phones. Like, what did people do at home? Did they talk to each other differently? Did they go to bed at different hours?
Mm.
What did their homes look like inside?
Mm-hmm.
Your listeners should know that we didn't do a book which was Architectural Digest. The concept of home, what we were trying to do was kind of photograph the emotions of home. Like, you know, did your parents measure you in the basement against a wall and those scratch marks, those little lines?
In the kitchen.
And did your parents leave it there? Is it still there today?
Yeah, I don't know if it's still there today, but yep.
I mean, there's all those little things like, you know, right now I have my son Jesse's 5 and Phoebe's now 8. And, you know, the thing they love is with a flashlight under the covers pretending we're bears and reading at night. And it's, you know.
Hasn't changed, has it?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. There's some things that are exactly the same as they were, you know, dozens and dozens of years ago, and other things that are so completely different. I'll give you one example. A friend of mine who has teenage daughters now told me that he suddenly realized the other day that he has no idea who his daughters are talking to on the phone. That when he was growing up, the phone would ring, and his parents would pick up the phone, and you know, the parents would be an intermediary. You know, Sally called or Joe called, and, you know, so-and-so's mother called, wants to know if you can come over for a play date. But now the parents are sort of cut out of that loop because many of the teenagers have their own cell phones. So you don't know if you like the tone of the voice of your daughter or son's boyfriend or girlfriend.
Yeah.
But you know, the world we live in is very different than it was before.
Yeah.
And, that's one of the things we were trying to capture. I mean, we got almost 250,000 photographs from the public and from our professional photographers. Did you have a favorite picture in the book?
Oh, it's so hard to say. But, you know, when you were talking about you and your children and families, I was moved by the kids in the bathroom with their fathers shaving.
The shaving page, yeah. Those are all amateur pictures, by the way. I mean, you know, not professionals.
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah, that's funny. I'm glad you picked that page. It's one of my favorites, also because my kids come in the morning and, you know, they watch me shave, and, you know, every young kid wants to pretend that they're doing it too. It's a wonderful. There's so many memories like that. As you said in the introduction a little while ago, you know, when you ask someone to remember what it was like to grow up, you look at their eyes and you see them literally fall back into memories. Just, you know, it's very interesting. You know, people always talk about mother and father, but when you actually think about the concept of home and whether you're rich or poor, you know, no matter where you live, your home is sort of like, it's like your nest.
Mm-hmm.
Even as adults, you know, people talk about their homes as a place to recover from the day, you know, to have a sense mm-hmm. of intimacy or privacy, or just to kind of, you know, just figure out who you are again after you've been out in the world dealing with all the stuff we all deal with every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we've had that kind of a day, my husband and I will say, let's go home and see Butch. And Butch is our cat.
Yes, yes.
Let's go home.
We have Nikki in Georgia. And, you know, also for kids growing up, having pets who are little like their siblings. You know,
yeah. Oh, there's another great spread in the book. And this is some kids out in Montana on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they are having, it just looks, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be fun to be a kid there? They have chickens and horses and a dog, and everybody is very busy.
Do you remember, I don't know if this is like this for you, but when I was growing up, I would literally come home from school, drop off my books and my backpack and whatever, and then my mother would say, just be home for dinner.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a rarity nowadays in most communities where the kids can just go and do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, no parents aren't scheduling them or driving them. You just get on your bike and you go out and you, I mean, I used to ride, you know, 5-10 miles sometimes and just disappear into the community and come back. And
that's how the whole summer was too.
Yeah. It was wonderful. You know, I wanted to also tell your listeners that in this book, America at Home, it sort of feels like people, you know, I think whenever there's a house for sale on my street, my wife and I always want to go over and look at it. It's not because we're going to buy our neighbor's house. It's just because I think there's a natural human curiosity to see how do people live, what kind of furniture do they have, what's their home look like.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And America at Home, this book that we did, that was sort of the idea to feel like people invited you to come in and stroll around and wander through their homes, not in a voyeuristic sense, but just like you're an invited guest in people's homes. And did that come through to you as you were looking at the book?
Very much so. People are very open about their homes. It's like, come in.
Yeah, you're not even aware of the photographers in most of the photographs. I mean, it feels as if the pictures took themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that you mentioned at the beginning, I used to shoot for National Geographic and Time and Life and other magazines, and I found that as a journalist, very often what I was being asked to photograph were sort of the aberrations or the exceptions or the things that were, you know, very dramatic. And what my wife Jennifer and I have been trying to do with our books, we started the Day in the Life series and America 24/7 and now this America at Home, is to create fascinating pictures of everyday ordinary life, things that you and I can relate to. That's not about all the bizarre things that people do that you see in all the newspapers and magazines, but a really interesting look at what life is like for most people.
Yeah. And here we have rituals and celebrations. We have a look at obsessions. We have a look at the house, at our homes, as workplaces, because so many of us are bringing work home with us every day to do there.
That's changed so much, too, where, you know, people used to go to work, and now an enormous number of people work out of their homes. I know my wife complains all the time that I come home and open up my laptop, and it's like, you know what, leave your work at work, and please come home and be with us.
Yeah, yeah.
Her criticism is completely appropriate.
What was it like for you to see the photographs come in?
Oh, it's always just wonderful. And also, you know, nowadays with digital photography, in the old days we used to shoot on film, and then we'd, you know, go through all these little pieces of, you know, plastic, looking at these little slides, and now you can look at them the size of your computer, and just again, it's sort of like, you know, looking over somebody's shoulder and seeing, you know, if you had to choose the one image of your life related to your home, what's the one picture you would, you know, want to represent, you know, to your great-grandchildren someday? Celeste, one of the most fun things about America at Home is that in addition to the fact that we featured a lot of work by not only professionals but amateurs, now that the book is out, people can actually upload their own photograph to our website.
Yeah.
When they get a copy of the book, their family, their dog, their wedding, their children, the house they grew up in 50 years ago, you know, scanned out of their parents' scrapbook, is on the cover of the book. We invented this about 4 years ago, and it's been just an enormous hit because it's not just slapped on the cover. It actually has, you know, America at Home superimposed over your house, and it's got the flap copy. But at the bottom it says, you know, photo by Celeste, and, you know, here's my dog, you know, playing in the backyard the first year we were in our new home. And if any of your listeners are interested, you can actually try this for free. You don't have to buy anything. If you want to buy the book, you can, but it's actually fun just to make it. You go to our website, which is www.myamericaathome.com. It takes about 4 minutes, and what's really cool, a young guy on our staff invented this. You actually see your picture appear on a three-dimensional model of the book on our website. And you can see what it looks like. You can crop it. You can move it around. And as you move your picture, you see the cover change in real time. It's very cool. People have written to us and said, I thought it was going to be difficult, and it was so much fun to do it. And again, you don't have to buy anything. You can just go onto the website and try it out. And about one out of every five people that buy America at Home actually end up putting their own families on the cover, which is very exciting.
That's amazing. My America at Home. And, you know, this would be a wonderful thing to do for someone in your family or a friend maybe who's moving into a new home or, you know, or celebrating some turning point in their life, to get a photograph of them. You know, I'm thinking, for example, I've got a relative who's coming up on his 80th birthday later this month.
Right.
And it would be so cool to go back into my parents' photographs that I have and find a photograph of that generation dancing in my grandparents' home.
Yeah, you go to Kinko's with your photo album and they'll scan the photograph for you.
Yeah.
And then you upload it to the website.
Yeah.
You can't believe how cool it looks. On our website, there's lots of examples of what other people have done. There's a thing called Gallery, and you can sort of take a look at the snapshots.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted your listeners to hear about America at Home is that in addition to terrific photography and very interesting captions where you really kind of feel like you've learned about the individuals in the pictures, there are some wonderful essays. Amy Tan is one of my favorite authors. Wrote this very, very wonderful personal essay about companionship at home, and she talks about her dogs, too. Matt Groening, who created The Simpsons, wrote a very funny introduction talking about the Simpsons as the quintessential dysfunctional American family. David Pogue from The New York Times is one of the most widely read technology columnists, just talks about what it's like to work at home where your kids are underfoot all the time, the sort of the good and the bad of that. And then Dominique Browning, who used to be the editor-in-chief of House and Garden magazine, also wrote. I mean, all these people sort of, you feel like, again, you're sitting down having a conversation with them. And it makes again, evokes all these memories that probably touch on things that you say, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that for a long time.
And Richard Rodriguez is here as well. And
yes.
I found his essay very poetic.
Yeah, there's it was so wonderful to have these very well-known authors contributing their feelings about home in a very personal way. You don't feel like you're reading a professional, it doesn't feel like you're reading an Amy Tan novel. It feels like you're having a cup of coffee with Amy, and she's telling you about what it's like to wake up every morning. And then also Terry Teachout from the Wall Street Journal also wrote about obsession, and it's one of my favorite chapters in America at Home because it's fascinating to see sort of what people choose to obsess about in their homes.
Yeah.
So there's a woman with like about 3,000 teddy bears.
Yeah, I was thinking of the very same photograph. And I was showing it to my husband last night, and he said, you say we have too much stuff. Ha! Huh. We're not so bad.
Well, there's barely room for her in the living
room. Yeah.
It's just really, really funny. And,
but she says it gives her so much comfort, so good for her.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it is, just people, are attracted to different things. One of the other things that I also it was fun for us putting the book together was coming up with some really interesting statistics about life at home. And one of the ones that I thought was really interesting is that 20% of American school children today speak a language other than English at home. 1 out of 5, which is that's really dramatic. And that most people live within 50 miles of where they were born.
That's hard to believe today.
Yeah, you'd think people would travel more. You know, it always amazes me. Have you traveled around Europe at all?
No.
Well, when I was very lucky when I was 16. I was in one of these exchange programs where you go live with a family for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best thing I ever did. I always think it should be almost mandatory just to, experience another culture. But one of the things that I thought was so interesting about Europe was when you think that the distance between France and Germany, for example, is like going from Ohio to Pennsylvania, right? I mean, they're next door to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they have a different language, different culture, different clothes, different food. And you think of what a small distance that is here in the United States, and it makes you realize how little people used to travel. Because they must have been so shut off from each other. Those borders must have been so well protected or enforced to have a completely different language, within miles of each other.
I wonder how that will change now with the EU.
Well, obviously borders are coming down. Interestingly enough, English tends to be the common language, at least in the business world. Even though, the French may not speak German, but they'll speak English to each other, which is also kind of interesting. In fact, the way that this doing a project like America Home is unbelievably expensive, as you can imagine, between hiring the professional photographers and inviting all the amateurs and putting a book like this together. So our partner on the project was IKEA. They're actually celebrating their 20th anniversary of being in the United States. And they invited 5 million people who are IKEA, you know, sort of customers, to send in photographs of their lives. But the book has nothing to do with IKEA. There's no products in there. There's no factories or anything like that. They just wanted to be associated with the concept of home.
Yeah, it was interesting to see their statement. They said home is not furniture. Home is something different, but they're happy to help us furnish our homes. But
yeah, but I mean, obviously they want people to think of IKEA, but it's sort of like IKEA wants to be thought of as home the way Xerox is copy. Hmm. Where it's sort of synonymous with it. But the reason I was mentioning them is that we've been talking now about extending this series. We actually did America at Home, and then a week later we did UK at Home. So there's a separate book out in England right now. You know, different photographers, different photography, different writing, but sort of similar idea. And we've been talking now about doing Japan and Germany next, which would be so exciting. To compare the cultures from one to the other.
And then
my dream as a photographer has always been that 100 years from now, these books would be even more interesting to people than they are today.
Yeah.
One of the things, we were talking about statistics a minute ago, how much do you think the average home has gone up in cost from 1970?
Oh, a lot.
1,000%.
1,000%.
So the average home in 1970 was about, I think it was $25,000. And now it's $250,000.
Wow!
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And the average home today is 2.5 times bigger than it was in 1972.
Yeah, yeah.
You were mentioning your dog. What's your dog's name?
It's a cat. His name is Butch.
Butch. Well, one of the things we also discovered is that last year Americans spent $41 billion on their cats and dogs, which is twice as much as just 10 years ago. So, you know, dogs and cats are playing a much larger role in people's lives than they were. Twice as much money is being spent.
Yeah. You know, what I need to do is kind of reset us here in terms of reintroducing you and the show and the topic. Oh. But I wonder what this says about us. Are we... what are we looking for when it's more important to have bigger homes and then what does it say that now I think I'm recalling this from the book. 63% of American households have a companion animal or one or more companion animals. Only 15% have come from shelters.
Yeah, well, I think people want to share their homes, whether it's with children or with animals, I mean, or with partners. I think your home is again, it's not a place. It's an emotion. I mean, it's a place where memories are formed and preserved and recorded. And people remember the smells of their rooms. Yeah. Teenagers have those signs saying, you know, parents keep out. It really is like a cave. So the whole idea, again, of creating a book like America at Home was to try to, when you can pick the book up and look and open it anywhere, and you just fall into other people's lives.
Yeah,
that's what I love about it. We've just received so many wonderful emails and letters from people saying that they thought they were just buying a nice book of photographs, and then they said, you know, every time their kids come home, every time their friends come over, everybody sort of starts turning the pages, and it reminds you of things from your own life.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, photographer Rick Smullen. He and Jennifer Irwitt are the creators of America at Home, A Close-Up Look at How We Live. The book is published by Running Press Book Publishers. What does home mean? That's our topic this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. Join us with your thoughts about home. Your questions and comments are invited. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, I spent a lot of time with this book, and it's been a pleasure. And it reminds me of the days when I was a kid and I had a couple of close friends, and when Life and Look magazines arrived in their homes, we could spend hours looking at the photographs.
So Celeste, that's the ultimate compliment to me, because I was just like you when Life and Look showed up. That was it.
Man, we were so quiet. It was just like, wow.
Yeah, it was like a window into a world that you just didn't even know existed. And that's exactly what we were trying to do with this book, is bring back that sense of wonder.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I always wanted my dad to build me a secret room. like you push on the wall and swing out, the Bat Cave one of the pictures in American Home is actually a family in Arizona, Ann and Harvey Cook in Gold Canyon, Arizona, who they built a secret room behind a bookcase.
Uh-huh.
And it's exactly what was my fantasy. You push on the bookcase and it sort of slides open. And
that's cool.
One of the fun things in putting America together, America at Home together, was which pictures do you contrast to each other? So the photograph opposite the people who have the secret room behind their bookshelf is a family in Chinatown in New York City, where the whole family lives in one room. It's the kitchen, it's the bedroom, it's the living room. The clothes are hanging from the ceiling, and sort of those two pictures then become more interesting because you have that amazing contrast. The other juxtaposition that I really like a lot in the book is there's some kids, a brother and sister, who actually have a $10,000 playhouse complete with electricity in McMurray, Pennsylvania. And so the 8-year-old Elise and 7-year-old Aiden Dowell spend their afternoons in this amazingly luxurious playhouse, which is actually a replica of their parents' home, which is obviously just around the little hill there. And opposite that is a photograph of a woman being evicted from her home because of the subprime mortgage horror that's going on right now. And again, this is not a Hallmark card about home. It's an honest, mostly upbeat, but it's a real look at home. It's not a saccharine, sugary, isn't home wonderful. Most of the book says home is pretty wonderful, but it's very honest. We talk about the fact that to a homeless person, their cardboard box, that's their home, and it's very important to them, and it's their sense of space.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the essay written by Dominique Browning. She wrote the essay for the part of the book "Home Is Sanctuary."
Yes.
And she writes about imagining losing a home, and I think many of us have thought about it. I'm sure many of us have experienced it, and whether it's due to natural disaster or financial disaster, it seems to me one of the points that she's making is it really serves us well to think about home as sanctuary.
And I also think that right now, when you read about the subprime mortgage crisis that's going on, it's all about money, and it's about, there's very little which really talks about what it must be like to have the foundation of your life sort of ripped away. And through no fault of your own, I mean, yes, there are some people who should have never received these loans, but there are many other people who are now suffering through, again, no fault of their own, simply because of the value of homes in general has now been pulled down by this crisis. And again, people have said to me, why on earth would you and Jennifer do a book about celebrating home when this is, the biggest housing crisis in recorded history? And I said, well, that's exactly the time to do it. It's to remind people of how important home is, and for people who still have their homes, to remind people how important it is to appreciate it and not take it for granted.
Yeah. Well, I think that's our hearts go out to folks in Myanmar and in China. And to people. I mean, I think if we just take a moment, we know we have some sense. We can imagine. We have some sense of what that loss would be if we put ourselves, we try to put ourselves in that situation. And when that was one of the hardest things also to watch about Katrina, is, people were just, they're lost and bereft, and those homes that we still see standing empty and
all these years later.
I think
again, we wanted very much to, everybody in America at Home is treated as an individual, not as a statistic. So if it's you know, somebody living in a mansion or somebody living in a cardboard box, you learn their name, you learn their history, you find out how old they are, you find out, you know, how they ended up either in this mansion or under this cardboard box as much as we could find out. So we were very specific with photographers when we sent them out to photograph America at Home that we wanted them not to just take pictures and walk away, but to actually learn about the people and let you as the reader picking up America at Home feel like you and your family as you read the book feel like, oh, okay, now this is a human being and I understand better the importance of what I'm seeing in this photograph because I know something about them as a person.
Yeah. There's a couple that are in the book photographed, Anthony Robinson and Belinda Darby. What this photo says to me is it says a lot about dignity, and it also says a lot about how, even without a physical house, a physical shelter, we as human beings try to preserve the spirit of home, of that place.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's got a little DVD player.
Yeah.
And so these are two homeless people. She actually has a PhD, I think, in physics, and she's pregnant. And he's got a little DVD player that he actually sets up at night and entertains other people in this sort of homeless area where they sleep at night. And again, you feel like you just learned something about them, and it wasn't just like a drive-by photograph, you know. And we wanted, again, very much to separate America at Home from what you see in most of the media, where people are treated as an example of something instead of it being specifically about them.
Yeah. Also in Sanctuary, we see a photograph, and I described this at the top of the show, at the top of the hour, a Somali refugee. And, I look at that photo, and in terms of the space it takes up on the page, it doesn't take up a lot of space, but I found myself wondering, you know, how does this 14-year-old feel about home, his old home, his new home?
Well, and what's amazing is when you, again, learn about the history of immigrants coming to the United States, that usually the immigrants that come here, probably as a lot of our parents did, take more advantage of what America has to offer than sometimes people who were born here. That if you look at what happened to an astounding number of Vietnamese immigrants who came here after the Vietnam War, within two generations their kids were at the top of the class at Harvard and Yale and Princeton. And these were people who came over who literally were, you know, they came over here, they were in sort of refugee camps in western Pennsylvania. They were all over the country, and their children, I mean, they understood how important it was to drive their kids to take advantage of the educational system, to take advantage of the freedom that America offers people to become whatever you want to become by working hard. So that same Somali refugee that you're seeing in this photograph, it's very possible that by the time that 14-year-old is 30 years old, they'll be running their own business or, you know, have had an amazing change of life because of the opportunities of being here. And I'm not saying, you know, yay, America, but I am saying yay, America. I think that there are very few places in the world where you're allowed to, with the ability to change your status is there for you if you want to take it, if you want to take advantage of it.
It was interesting. There was another family in the book. They came from Sudan, mm-hmm. refugees from Sudan, and they're all dressed beautifully. I mean, not beautifully. I mean, not fancy. But do you know what I mean? They're dressed little girls dressed in a
bring their culture with them,
and
kids have this amazing ability, I think, to have to absorb other cultures while retaining their own.
Yeah, and apparently this family, one of the things that they told the photographer was that when they thought of home, they thought of America. You know,
amazing, isn't it? Well, it's probably the first home they've had where, you know, they were not sleeping under a tent or being moved from place to place every night.
Yeah.
Just, you know, maybe to us we'd look at it and say, well, that's not a good neighborhood. But to them, it's like a place that actually they get to call home. It's just so important to people. I mean, putting a roof over your children's heads and providing them with a sense of comfort and warmth and that shelter. It's, again, back to that almost animal nest feeling. Mm. Is something that you really see that sense of nesting throughout the pages of America at Home as you turn the pages of this book.
And, this idea of home and its importance goes way back. I mean, when we're little children just beginning to master our crayons, we draw our families and we draw houses.
That's right, yep. Yeah.
Well, let's take a call. Let me reintroduce first our guest, Rick Smolin. He and Jennifer Irwitt are the creators of America at Home, a close-up look at how we live. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. What are your thoughts about home? 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's go and take a call now from someone who's listening in West Chicago. Line 4, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah, love this conversation. I love to be home. I do a lot of traveling, and always nice to be home. It's one place I know I can stay grounded. you guys are bringing up a topic here that actually, I hate to say, a lot of people nowadays are losing their homes and struggling. I hate to see it in this country. Some of it's self-induced and some of it isn't. So it extremely hurts if somebody loses their house, especially when they worked hard to get there. And, no amount of money is gonna take the feeling away that you're going to lose your home. And I don't know, there's something wrong with the way our culture, our generation has been brought up, I'm a product of the baby boomers, but I'm maybe the tail end of it coming up. The problem I see is that we're so in a hurry to get from point A to point F, which, I mean, you want to make that $150,000 or $200,000 a year within a certain amount of years and retire before you're 50, that we forget everything about the home in between. And the reason I say this is that we got to keep up with the Joneses. We got to have those Mercedes Benz. We got to have this big, huge, gigantic 5,000 and 6,000 square foot house. When if you start out small, and I did, actually the best house I ever had in my life was probably the smallest.
Yep.
It was
yep.
the cutest. I love it, and the one I've got now, not to take anything away from it. I mean, it's just my wife and I and nobody else now. It's a little bit too big for us, but I love being at home. I love listening to your radio station when I'm at home. I'm on the road now, but I usually listen to the station at home, and it's just nice. I've got a water garden out there. I've got great vegetables going, and I love the springtime because a lot of my trees are matured enough that everything's got blossom. It's perfect, and I don't have to worry about competing with the traffic on the outside anymore. But good topic on conversation. I love it, and I'll let everybody go. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Rick, what do you think?
I think the caller is absolutely right. I mean, I think one of the points that we were really trying to bring home in America at home in this book is that the photographs in this book sort of teach us again and again that a home is not the walls, floors, or even the furnishings. It's the people who live in it. Mm-hmm. It's the experiences that we all share together. And I think your caller just hit the nail right on the head. I think it doesn't matter if your home is big or small. It doesn't matter what the stuff is, whether you have the latest new plasma, TV or whatever. It's your relationships with other people or with your, with Butch. that's what's going to last for you forever, and that's what's the most important. And as a photographer, it's interesting. My brother's a director in Hollywood. He directs a lot of TV shows, and we always have this debate whenever we're together for family events because, I'm a still guy and he's a moving guy, and I always say, look, it's when you think of moments in your life, it's the wedding picture, it's the one frame that stands out to you. I think human beings actually think in snapshots. I don't think they think in moving images. I think our memories tend to be a particular moment frozen in time that represents a special day or a special moment in our lives. And that's why, again, with America at Home, we were trying to create that feeling of one snapshot of all these very interesting people's lives spread out across the United States, all taken in 1 week, all focused on the most important place in most people's lives, which is their homes.
Yeah, we've got another couple of listeners who would like to join us this afternoon. Next, we go to a listener in Belgium, line 4. Hi.
Good afternoon. In my occupation, I spend a lot of time in people's homes. I build things for them and install them. And one of the things I've found in a lot of homes is a lot of people put a lot of money into things, and they really, I don't know if it really makes a home better. They always try to, well, this thing has to be a little bit better. I want this a little bit nicer than somebody else's. And it's a sad, sad statement, because sometimes I think the real home is lost because they have this burning desire to have a house beautiful.
Yeah. I personally like chaos, especially having a 5 and 8 year old at home, whether I like it or not, but I actually do like it. But I just like the stuff, and I like everything scotch taped to the walls. And again, I like things where what's in the house is memories. Buying things is not a memory. You know, it's sort of the, I think people love that feeling of crafting your home and surrounding themselves with, whether it's images or objects they created or something where each object, there's a story behind it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's take another call now. A listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I have a question I've been trying to run by someone in a long time, and I don't know if you're the right person, but I'm going to take a shot at it. It's sort of a devil's advocate kind of question. Are you familiar with the book by the anthropologist Bruce Chatwin, Songlines?
Sure, in Australia, yeah.
Right, right. Well, I found that difficult, and I didn't actually get all the way through it. But it left me with the feeling, and I don't know if I'm correct, that he believed that settling, people becoming landlocked was the origin of violence. Human violence,
and because then you had possessions. You
mean? I guess something more to protect. And as I say, I really found it difficult, and so I could be wrong about that. You know what I took from him.
Well, I remember.
I thought I might just. I certainly am a lover of homes, and I kind of think I like the kind of home you're talking about. But when you were recently going through where you have to give up your family home, or you might have to,
yeah,
or you might have to go through an awful lot to preserve the family home, in the back of your mind you're going, well, you know, Mom always taught us they're just things.
Yeah.
Is this important or isn't it, and why is it important? And so in, as I've been asking myself that, I've kind of gone back to, I've reminded myself of what I thought he meant, and I'll just hang up and listen to whatever comments you might have. Thank you.
Okay, an opportunity to do some riffing there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading Bruce's book many years ago. I lived in Australia for quite a few years, which is one of my favorite countries on earth, and I think the point he was making was that sort of in early human history when we were nomads basically following the herds, that we were basically constantly on the move, and then slowly as people put down roots, and then agriculture became more central than you know, basically following herds, that possessions, you know, people then staked out land and there was more conflict. But I think that's just a theory. I'm not sure. I think human beings have always fought with each other over things, whether it's been, you know, property or...
Or when it's inside the house, right?
Yeah.
there's conflict everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's probably just human nature. And if anything, I actually think if you actually talk to historians, we are actually much more peaceful today, as hard as that is to believe, given what you see in the news, than we were throughout history. Human beings have always been actually pretty violent. And I think we're probably, on the whole, we're better off today, because I think the more possessions or the more you can take care of your family, the less, you know, sense of desperation there is. We did a book last fall called The Blue Planet Run about the global water crisis, and that was truly disturbing when you realize there's places in the world where people literally ever wake up every morning not knowing if they're going to have water for their family that night. Again, you know, as you look through the pages of America at Home, I think this is, it's sort of like looking into a mirror. I think, you know, Celeste, I think a lot of people tend to spend time with other people who are kind of like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you live in a community where there's other people in the same economic class, mm-hmm, or the same racial group or the same political group. And one of the things that I think is fascinating, and again, I'm too close to the book, but you could probably speak to this, is that you feel like you've sort of gone on a tour of American homes to places you had no idea existed, but that are utterly fascinating when you get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of a couple of things, and we're going to have to wrap up here with maybe about,
yeah,
a minute or two left. There's a, excuse me, there's a photograph of a family headed by a single dad.
Yeah.
And they're in kind of tight quarters, but he is in his spare time, which I'm sure he has a lot of, he's building a home for his family, a new home, and it will be about 1,400 square feet. And I just, I'm there in my thoughts, you know, like, get there. And then there's another photo, Dee Williams in her trailer cottage. And she's on the back of the jacket, and there's a couple of photos of her in the book. And it's a very small little place, but it's a lot of love has gone into this.
Yeah, her home actually will fit into a parking spot,
yeah.
75 square feet home. And it looks quite spacious inside. Her dog's sitting on the front porch. And she her monthly electric bill is $6 a month. It's interesting, a lot of environmental websites are actually featuring that book from that image from our book American Home because it is so environmentally sound. Celeste, I wanted to just remind your listeners one more time, if I might, that if you're interested in seeing American Home, it's available in bookstores everywhere. But one of the most fun components of the book is that you can put your own photograph on the cover of the book by going to our website, and you can see what your baby, your wedding, the house you grew up in when you were a little kid would look like. And the website is www.myamericaathome.com. And again, you can upload a picture for free and see what it looks like. If you like it, obviously you can actually receive the book with the cover, but you don't have to pay anything to see it. And you can email the covers to your friends, and it's really fun to do it. And it's a great way to. My mother-in-law is turning 80 on Sunday this week, and we're giving her a book with
so
her house on the cover.
You had the same kind of thought.
Exactly. Yeah, you mentioned you had somebody in your family the same age.
Yeah.
Like all of us. It's just a wonderful way to sort of, you know, say, hey, Mom, you know, here, thank you for so many memories. Here's all of us when we were little, and here's the house we grew up in. And people just love these covers. So encourage people just to try it out.
Okay. There we've got to leave it. We've got to go. We're out of time. Rick, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Rick Smolin, he and Jennifer Irwitt are the creators of America at Home, a close-up look at how we live. Again, the website is My America at Home. And also, let me tell you that the publisher of America at Home is Running Press Book Publishers. And that interview was conducted on May 14th. Of this year. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Henry Frain is our technical director this afternoon. Joining us now with settlement prices from Kansas City and Chicago, Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. Taking a look at those numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pip. Nearby September, 14 and one half cents lower today. The high at 873 and a quarter, low at $8.41. Settlement price there at 845 and a quarter, 14 and a half lower for the soft red winter wheat. December futures, $8.98. The high, the low at 66. Settlement price at $8.70 and a quarter, down 14 and a half. In the March contract, 920 and three quarters. The high, the low at 890 and three quarters. Settlement price at 894 and a half, 14 and a half lower. May futures in the soft red winter wheat pit, $9.37 and a quarter, the high, the low at 906 and a half. Settlement price, $9.10 and one quarter, down 14 and a half. Next year's July futures for the day settled in the July, 13 and three quarters lower, 946, the high, the low at 16. Settlement price at $9.20, down 13 and three quarters. In Kansas City, the hard red winter wheat, September contract, 9 and a half lower at $8.80 and a half. And the spring wheat in Minneapolis at the grain exchange settled 934 and a half, down 9 and a half for the afternoon. Corn pit now, September futures, 11 and three quarters cents the gain, up 11 and three quarters for the September, 573 and three quarters the high, the low at 541 and a half, a settlement price at 564 and three quarters, 11 and three quarters higher for the September corn. December contract, new crop harvest month, 593 and a quarter the high, the low at $5.61, settlement price at 584 and a half, up 11 and three quarters in the March futures, $6.11 and three quarters the high, the low at 580, settled at 603 and three quarters, 12 cents higher in the May futures, 623 and a half the high, the low at $5.93, settled at 615 and a quarter, up 11 and three quarters. July contract in the corn pit, 632 the high, the low at $6.50. Settlement price at $6.24 and a quarter, up 12 and one quarter. Next year's December futures for the day settled at 618 and a quarter, 7 and one quarter higher. September oat futures, 378 and a half the high, the low at 368. Settlement price at 369 and a half, down 6.5 cents. And December futures, $3.89, down 6.5 for the day. September soybean futures, $13.31 and a quarter the high, the low at 1250. Settlement price at 1267, 12 cents lower on the afternoon. November beans, 1341 the high, the low at 1258 and a quarter. The harvest month settled the November, 13 cents lower at $12.76 a bushel. January futures, 1356 and a quarter the high, the low at $12.76 and a half, settlement price at $12.94, so a very wide trading range, down 12 and three quarters in the Jans. In the March contract, $13.70 and a quarter the high, the low at $12.95, settled at $13.08 and a half cents a bushel, down 13 and three quarters. May futures, $13.79 the high, the low at $13.04, settlement price at $13.17. 14 and three quarters lower. November beans next year settled $12.65, down 11 and one half. September bean meal futures today, 365.30 the high, the low at 340.70. Settlement price at 345.80, down $4. And September bean oil futures, 54.66 the high, the low at 51.44. A settlement price at 52.38, down 14. Just a quick reminder that Agronomy Day happens here on campus this Thursday on the South Farms, kicks off at 7 a.m. I'll be dispatching the wagons into the research fields. It's absolutely free if you'd like to come out and see what the researchers and scientists from the campus have been up to. Starts at 7 o'clock in the morning. We'll dispatch the wagons into the fields until noon. There is a lunch. You can pay for that if you'd like. It's a nominal fee. And Gail Buchanan will be here, Undersecretary for USDA, to talk about energy. That's all on the Agronomy Day South Farms this Thursday morning. It's the 21st of August. Just one reminder, if you're going to come down Lincoln Avenue, it is move-in day for the students, and that's going to be jammed. So be here before 8 o'clock. Otherwise, you'll be in a traffic jam trying to get into campus on Thursday morning. Back in a moment with the numbers from the CME Group's Mercantile Exchange side.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
From the Mercantile Exchange on a Tuesday afternoon, live cattle futures today settled at $100.70, a high at $101.80, a low at $100.67.5, and the August at $100.70, settled $1.22.5 lower. October futures, $105.82.5, the high, the low at $104.75. Settlement price at $104.82.5, down 1.12 and one half. In December contract, $106.75, the high, the low at $105.75, settlement price at $105.82.5, 92.5 cents lower. February live cattle futures, $106.95, the high, the low at $105.85, settlement price at $105.92.5, 100 weight, down $1.25. August futures, $113.75 in the feeder cattle pit on the high, the low at $112.55, settlement price at $112.70, down 95 cents. And September futures for the feeders at $113.50, the high, the low at $112.55, settled at $112.70, down 87.5. October contract, $113.35, the high, the low at $112, settled at $112.77.5, down 72.5 cents. November feeder cattle, $113.25, the high, the low at $111.65, settled $111.95, down $1.30. August lean hog futures today at $88.85, they were up 27.5 cents. October futures, $76.35, the high, the low at $75.15, settlement price at $75.25, down 55. And December futures there, $75.25, the high, the low at $74.20, settled at 74.27.5, 72.5 lower. February futures in the lean hogs, 80.70 the high, the low at 79.40. Settlement price at 79.45, down $1.12.5. The frozen bellies finished the August contract at $80.10, $2.90 lower. You're listening to WILL Urbana. I'll be back with the numbers from the closing market report in just about 6 minutes. I'm Todd Gleason.